But at the same time, I would say that modern man, that's of course a rather impressive expression just for you and I, all of us. Modern man is irreligious, more in appearance than in reality. Conventional religion, one might say quite frankly, has become something quite flat and something quite stale. I remember not so long ago, I had a conversation with a young curate, a young Anglican curate. In fact, perhaps I shouldn't say this, of one of the churches up the road. So, we were talking shop. So, even Anglican curates and Buddhist bhikkhus can talk sort of religious shop. So he was asking me how long I spoke for when I gave a talk or a lecture. So I said, oh, usually for an hour, sometimes an hour and a quarter. I said, once at the Buddhist Society, I got sort of interested in the subject. I spoke for an hour and 45 minutes. He said, good heavens. He said, good heavens. He said, I never speak for more than 10 minutes in church. He said, people are interested in that. He said, your people must be interested if you can regularly speak for one whole hour. So just think, according to his statement, according to his confession, at least the people who went to his church, which is probably representative, weren't so much interested in the Christian faith that they could even sit for more than 10 minutes and listen to a talk about it. They just wanted, of course, the talk, the sermon, as they call it, because that's the convention, that's the tradition, it has to be gone through, just like passing around the plate at the end. You don't particularly welcome it, but it's something you've always done, and so when you listen to the sermon, you put your hand into your pocket and you put something on the plate, it's all part of the routine, all part of the ritual, as it were. But it's all flat, it's all stale. So modern people are quite right, in a way, to lose interest in this sort of thing. Why should they be interested? There's no life in it, no vitality in it, no meaning in it, no deeper significance. So what is the point of continuing this meaningless routine, week after week, month after month? Of course, there are some good people in the churches, well-meaning people, who still think in terms of a revival of religion, in terms of getting masses of people, tens of thousands of people, back into church, sitting on those pews, sitting on those hard wooden seats, or getting down on their knees on the hassocks and confessing their sins, beating their breasts, if necessary, just a bit gently, and confessing, saying that they've done this and done that and that they're sorry. Some still think in these terms of having a revival of religion in the old conventional sense, but it's quite impossible. One can't really put the clock back in that way. One can never put the clock back. The hands are always going round and round, on and on inexorably. One might wish to, one might like to, or one perhaps like to put the clock back in many parts of the world. I'd certainly like to put it back if I could in Tibet, say 10 years or 15 years, but one can't. Now, a few people, even in the Church of England, few people like the Bishop of Woolwich, they realize this. You can't put the clock back. So they're trying quite desperately, sincerely, to cope with the situation. Even to the extent, you know, when you're shipwrecked, or rather when you're going to be shipwrecked, when there's a terrible storm, when the boat is full of water, what do? You throw overboard everything which is heavy, because your life is in danger. You might even have a box of diamonds on board. You might even have a trunk of pearls. You might even have bars of gold. But if it's loading the boat, if it's making it go down below the waterline, if your life is in danger, without any hesitation, you'll throw overboard the diamonds and the pearls and the gold bars and everything. Because life is more precious. This reminds me, just by the way, of a little story from the scriptures. There's a man lost in the desert. And he was lost there for days and days and days. Nothing to eat, nothing to drink. So he was in desperation, as it were. So he was wandering around aimlessly, blindly. They came upon a track in the sand, the track of a caravan. So he said, well, thank heavens that I'm saved. So he went on and on, and on, mile after mile. And then he saw in the distance, at the end of the track, two or three dead camels. And there were some loads on them. So he thought, oh, there must be food, there must be water, I'm saved. So he staggered up, sort of clutched hold of the side of the camel, tore off the sack, opened it to get at something to eat and to drink, and what do you think he found? It was full of pearls. So what was his state of mind? Couldn't eat pearls, he couldn't drink them. So when life is at stake, these things are worthless. So just the same, when the ship is sinking, you'll fling overboard everything. The pearls, the diamond, the gold. So in the same way, here's this ship, this good old ship, the Christian church, at least the Church of England, once it's sinking, but some of the timbers are pretty rotten, and the water is pouring in. So they're ready to throw overboard all sorts of things. So even God, save the church, save Christianity, if possible, even at the cost of throwing God overboard. So that's what the Bush of Woolwich has done. He realizes that the situation is critical, acute. Half measures are no good. Even God goes overboard. So lightening the boat, you see, it's floating on now a little better, at least so far as the Bush of Woolwich is concerned. And he's there sitting at the helm, as it were, trying to steer it, now that it's become lighter. Now, if religion, if conventional religion, by even mere virtue of the fact that it's conventional, has become, as it were, non-religious, in the same way there are certain non-religious activities, or certain non-religious areas of life and culture, which have come to be possessed, as it were, of religious, or at least of spiritual, significance and value. Religious, of course, means, as we've already seen, that which contributes to the wholeness of man, which gives him some sense of ultimate values, in the plural at least, if not in the singular. So there are lots of people nowadays who can't find this in conventional religion, but who can find it, at least to some extent, even a limited extent, elsewhere. There are some people, as you probably know, maybe some such people are here amongst you. Some people find this, for instance, say, in classical music, Western classical music. They get more out of that. They get more spiritual feelings, more spiritual inspiration out of that, out of, say, Beethoven, out of Mozart, out of Bach, than they do by going to church. It sometimes strikes them as extremely odd. Going to church, you feel depressed, come away flat, uninterested, but listen to a fine piece of classical music, a symphony or something of that sort, you feel uplifted, you feel as though you have a certain insight into things, you feel better, you feel more whole, more integrated, more refined. So some people get these sort of spiritual values out of so-called secular things. Others find it, of course, in poetry, whether ancient poetry or whether modern poetry. Others again find it in philosophy. Reading, say, Schopenhauer, reading Kant, reading Plato, or reading even the more spiritual philosophers like Plotinus. So sometimes it happens in the modern time that not only has the religious become evacuated of spiritual significance, but the so-called secular is sometimes more deeply imbued with a spiritual significance than the so-called conventional religion. So it would seem that many modern people are not so much without religion, but they derive their spiritual values not from conventional religion, but from what are really, technically at least, secular areas of life and culture, which have become, as it were, at least in some of their aspects, more spiritualized, or more capable of giving spiritual inspiration and guidance even, than the so-called religious, the conventionally or technically religious areas. So it would seem, therefore, that religion in the true sense, as distinct from conventional religion, from churches and so on, is necessary for more people than one had first supposed. And because it is necessary for them, because they need it, if they can't get it from the churches, if they can't get it from conventional religion, then they'll get it somehow. Whether it's from classical music or poetry, or even from other things of that sort. At the same time, however, one must be careful not to exaggerate. The number of people who do derive some sort of spiritual inspiration in this way is frankly limited. there are lots of people, even more people, who get along, not only without religion in the conventional sense, but without classical music, even without classical jazz, one can say, without poetry, without even modern poetry, without philosophy, without any cultural interest at all, quite devoid of all that. They're quite satisfied with their home and their family, their job, their television, washing machine, and the rest of it, the car, in their garage, or at least at the curb, and so on and so forth. And apparently they manage to live, or at least to exist, without any cultural interest at all, in a perfectly respectable, decent, Philistine sort of way. Reminds you of a line of T.S. Eliot, and the wind shall say they were a decent, godless people. Something of that sort.